Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another episode of The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone in the entertainment world. My guest today is multifaceted. He's a musician. No, he's a sports talk radio host. No, he's a comedy writer. And Lord knows what else. It is my great pleasure to welcome Ian Danter. Good to talk to you, Ian.
And to you, Simon. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You have just released a fabulous CD, Prove You Wrong. And trust me, I do a lot of music, and I like it. But
thank you very much. That's very kind of you.
But before we get into the CD, you are very well known in the UK, but maybe not quite so well known on this side of the pond. How about telling us a little bit about who Ian Danter is?
Well, I'm a sports presenter on TalkSport Radio here in the UK, which is a station that you can actually get on the Sirius network over there in the States. I have a regular program talking about football, mostly, which goes out on a Saturday night here in the UK, so you can work your hours back, whether you're Eastern or Pacific time in the US. I've been doing that for best part of 10 years, working for TalkSport, but before I got into radio, I had designs on being a rock star when I was in my late teens and early 20s, was in a number of original bands that had varying degrees of no success, but I was writing songs all the way during that time, and the album that you've heard, the album that you like, Prove You Wrong, is a collection of songs that I've written over the last two decades or so.
Okay, I'm curious. You say your program's about football. Now, for our U.S. Audience, I think you mean soccer.
Soccer.
You're right.
Yeah, absolutely. We do talk about American football now and again because, of course, the NFL does come to play at Wembley Stadium a couple of times a year now. But this is the round ball. This is the game that we invented over here and took to the world that I talk about most of the time.
Yeah, I have to admit that even though I've been this side of the pond for more than 30 years, I really can't get excited about a game that involves a ball that isn't round and you rarely actually kick it. And yet call it football.
Well, I'm not going to touch that one and incur the wrath of millions of American listeners who love their love the ball game. But anyway, soccer is my one of my main loves. I mean, this is the strange thing, Simon. You know, but when I was in my 20s, and somebody would have said to me, you'd be working on British radio talking about football and you'd have spent 5 years of your life playing drums in a Kiss tribute band that played across Europe and that you were bringing out your own album, I think I would have had that person sectioned who'd come up with that particular idea. It's just wonderful how, you know, you get to do exactly what you never dreamed you could do, but always wanted to, and that's how things have panned out.
Right, and that really brings me on to my next question. You know, you're hugely successful as a sports presenter. How did the Prove You Wrong project come about?
Well, like I said, I always had these songs that I'd written in various original bands that I was in during the 1990s and songs that I'd written after that once I'd got into working in radio. But the actual catalyst for starting it was something slightly unfortunate. There's a band here in the UK called Shy, whose guitarist Steve Harris was a good friend of mine, and he passed away. He suffered from a brain tumour, and he passed away a couple of years ago. And it was at his funeral that I was talking to a producer friend of mine, and we were talking about, you know, songs and what a great songwriter Steve was, which he was. He was a brilliant songwriter, and how he managed to complete Shy's last album, which was released about 18 months ago, and got that done and released before his condition deteriorated. And we were so pleased that he managed to get it done. And this producer, Alex, said to me, "You've got a load of songs, haven't you?" And I said, "Yeah, was it? You should record them, because you never know what's around the corner." And I said, "Well, do you know what? You're absolutely right." So without further ado, I booked studio time in February of last year, this was, and started the project.
I think that's just fabulous. I'm not sure quite how you found the time to do it.
Well, I mean, it did take me a good few months to get it done, because I obviously, with my workload and things like that, and watching soccer matches and things like that, it does, as you suggest, take up a lot of your time. But what I also did was I made sure I booked 3 or 4 days at the very start of the project, so that I could get the drums recorded all as one, you know. And the beautiful thing was, within 3 days, I'd got all the drums done and most of the bass guitars recorded. So I made a really good start on the project within the first week, and then it was just picking days when I could go in and lay down some tracks, be it bass or guitar and whatnot. So it was just piece by piece. It was put together over about 6 or 7 months.
I must admit, I got a huge chuckle from the press release I received. Ian Danter's CD release party will be held on Friday, March 22nd at Birmingham City Football Club's Jasper Carrot Suite.
And there you go.
Right.
Well, and, you know, this is all part of the sort of synergy, if you like, between the two things that I've spent most of my adult life doing, whether it's music or soccer. And my personal, the club I love, the club I support, is Birmingham City, and the club very kindly offered to host my launch night, and I was only too happy to have it there. It was brilliant to celebrate the launch of it at my favourite football ground. So it made perfect sense to me. And thankfully, it made perfect sense to everyone that came along. It was a really good night.
Okay. For the benefit of our U.S. listeners, would you like to tell us who Jasper Carrot is?
Oh, well, Jasper Carrot is a very famous English stand-up comedian who lived in and around Birmingham for many years. He used to play in folk clubs playing acoustic guitar, his own songs, and what happened was his between song patter started getting longer than the songs he was playing. He started talking more and more between the songs and turned from a folk singer into a stand-up comedian, and he's very, very successful. Now, his production company was actually responsible for selling Who Wants to Be a Millionaire around the world. So I know you guys have got that over there with Regis Philbin and whatnot. So he's diversified and been a very successful stand-up comic and businessman. But he loves Birmingham City just as much as I do. So and as we haven't got that many famous players, they named one of the very nice suites at the ground after him.
And Do you actually know Jasper?
I do, yeah. I'm very lucky to have worked with Jasper on a couple of projects over the last few years, and he's a very friendly fellow, very inclusive. As a, you know, despite the fact that he's a bit of a superstar over here, he doesn't have a side to him at all. He's very hardworking, but a very honest and very friendly fella. He's been, it's been an absolute joy to work with him on occasions.
I have to admit that, you know, even though it was more than three decades ago, I thought he is a tremendously funny comedian.
Oh yeah, he's very much the, you know, the latter of recognition was what he was about, observational comedy, you know, comedy about everyday situations. It was quite revolutionary at the time because we, that's kind of the norm these days, but in a time where lots of comedians were just doing gags, you know, one-liners, Jasper was a comedian that actually tried to do something a little bit different when he came onto the scene in the 70s, and he was part of that revolution that is kind of now the accepted norm, where all sorts of stand-up comedians spend a lot of their routine talking about their own personal experiences. But, you know, when he started out, it simply wasn't done that way. So he was quite a visionary, really.
Indeed. And enough of Jasper. Mm. Let's go to the CD. I'm wondering if you'd have any objections to me playing a track.
And go right ahead. You're not going to get me stopping you.
This is She's From a Different Solar System.
Listen to
track. Hard rock is dead. Long live hard rock. Who plays what?
Well, pretty much all of that. All of that aside from the lead vocals is me. That's me on drums, on bass, and all the guitar parts that you hear, and on a few of the backing vocal lines as well. And the lead vocals are taken by a very good friend of mine, Lee Small, who is a fantastic singer. He's a singer with Shy, the band I mentioned earlier, here in the UK, and he sings on 12 of the album's 15 tracks. He's an absolutely stunning singer. So it's like a cross between Brad Delp from Boston and Glenn Hughes from, you know, Deep Purple and Black Country Communion. He's got an amazing voice, and I was so thrilled that he could get involved on this project.
As I understand it, you play a multitude of instruments. Are you professionally trained or just self-taught?
No, I'm self-taught. I found out when I was a boy that I had what's known as perfect pitch, which meant you could play me a note on a piano or a guitar, and I could tell you what that note was. And that meant, as I found out, you know, you think, well, what use is that? Well, that meant that I could pick things up like songs that I listened to on the radio and learn how to play them very quickly. And improve my technique that way. Drums became my main instrument when I got into my early teens. I started as a piano player, but being a huge Kiss fan, I saw Kiss play here in the early 80s, and it made me want to be a drummer because I saw the size of Eric Carr's drum kit. And that was that. I wanted to be a drummer. But at the same time, as I got into my late teens, I started playing guitar and bass as well to go in with my piano. So I became the annoying one in all the bands I was in, Simon, you know, the one who could write the songs and was showing everybody how to play their individual parts. So the amount of guitar players who I used to tear their hair out by showing them how to play the parts, rather than coming up with their own ideas, I've lost count of the number of guitarists, that I've annoyed down the years.
What a great attitude!
Well, I mean,
I like it.
I never forced my abilities down anybody's throat in that sense. I was never particularly. It was like the bands I was in were kind of like benevolent dictatorships where I, if there was a better song than mine, then we'd learn that. But it just turned out most of the songs that I wrote for the bands I was in were the ones that they wanted to do. They realised they were good songs. So, you know, it's an occupational hazard having that sort of ability as a multi-instrumentalist, because it takes a lot of time for people to trust you.
Right. Yeah. You know, the old jack of all trades, master of none label.
Oh yeah. Well, you get that. I mean, but if I was to pick an instrument that I felt I was better at than anything else, then I would certainly pick the drums. The drums are certainly my main love. Most of the bands I've been in, I've been the drummer, whether it be original bands or covers bands or tribute bands, anything. I've pretty much always been the drummer.
I know that the CD is, you know, only recently released, but what sort of reaction are you getting from fans or non-fans?
A lot of pleasant surprise, because one of the reasons why I picked Prove You Wrong as the title was that when people heard what I was doing when I first started putting the album together, there was this surprise from those who only know me for my radio work, saying, what on earth are you doing? making an album. It's going to sound dreadful. What do you know about music? What do you know about making a record? And that sort of spurred me on to really work hard and make the record the best it could be, because I wanted to prove those people wrong who were kind of being a bit sneery about it all, which I should have expected, really, when most people in the UK know me as a sports presenter on the radio rather than a musician. So I had those people to prove wrong. And I wanted to prove something to myself as well. And I think I did, because the reaction I've had has been one of great surprise, pleasant surprise, you know. There were obviously lots of friends who know me and people I've grown up with and people I've been in bands with who knew that I was capable of putting this project together and doing most of the work myself. But it's, you know, people who've bought it on a whim or bought it because they've heard me on the radio, and the reaction they've given me, they've gone, well, do you know what? This actually stands up in its own right. It's inconsequential about what you do or the gimmick of what you are, or, you know, it's actually a really, really good rock and roll album.
Oh, I think it's a wonderful album. I have to ask you, why pick the hard rock genre? You know,
that's what I've always loved. I mean, I'm lucky in that I've got. See, I'm 44 years of age. I'm lucky in that I've got two older brothers who, when I was just about 4 or 5, 6 years of age, and I was just starting to understand the concept of music and groups and bands and things like that, they were listening to albums like Thin Lizzy's Live and Dangerous, or Deep Purple's Machine Head, or Rainbow Rising. And those albums had a very profound influence on me as a small boy. And then when I was about maybe about 10, I got into Kiss. And Kiss weren't that well known over here. They toured once in 76. They did 3 shows in 76 over here, but they weren't the headline act that they were by that time in America. And so it was lucky for me that my cousin had a couple of Kiss records, including Kiss Alive. And I took that home. I borrowed it off him because I loved the look of the cover and absolutely fell in love with Kiss from that moment on. And they're still my favorite band to this day. I still love them to pieces. I'm going to go and see them next month, actually, in Copenhagen. They're coming over to Europe to do some shows. They're not coming to Britain, but if they won't come to me, I'll come to them. So I'm off to see them in Denmark next month. But that's the reason, you know, Simon. It's all about, I've always loved rock music from a very early age, and that's what I know. It's what I understand.
All right. Here's what I propose we do. We have an absolutely shameless commercial break. Where can people buy copies of Prove You Wrong?
Well, the first place they can go to hear samples of all 15 tracks, they can go to my website. That is www.iandanta.co.uk. I'll spell that out. It's a www.iandanter.co.uk, and they can hear the album there. Alternatively, they can go on Amazon, I guess, if they want to. Obviously, these are for CDs, which have all the lyrics in there and some fantastic liner notes written by Kerrang journalist Steve Beebe. But if people would just prefer a download version, they can get it through iTunes. That's no problem. But, yeah, if they want to hear the samples of all 15 tracks, then my website at iandanta.co.uk has 30-second snippets of each tune for you to listen to.
And I recommend that listeners do try that route. I if you love hard rock, you're just going to fall in love with this album. In fact, on that subject, why don't we play another track?
Why not?
Ian, how does Stay in My Heart sound to you?
That's a great track. It's had a bit of a new lick of paint, but this was one of the first songs I ever wrote and felt confident about. You're going back about 25 years, and I remember bringing this song to rehearsal with the band I was in, and the guitar, playing it for the guitar player, and usually when I played a new song for him, he sort of scoffed and didn't really say much, but on this occasion when I played Stay In My Heart for him, even in its original form back then, he listened to me play it and said, yeah, that's not bad, that. And that, you know, was as far as he was concerned, was like somebody else saying, that's the greatest song ever written. So I knew I was onto something with this tune. And Lee, sings the lead vocals on this, and I play pretty much everything else apart from the guitar solo. And the guitar solo is played by that same fella who said, that's not bad, that, all those years ago. It's a song that means an awful lot to me, and it's a great AOR rock track, in my opinion. It's got a great soaring chorus, and Lee's vocals are just amazing on this one.
Okay, well, let's take it for a spin. another great track, but you said earlier that mostly the CD was constructed in the studio. Do you plan on taking this into a live venue?
Oh, without question, Simon, yes. There are already dates planned here in the UK during the summer, and I've put together a live band to help me perform it because I can't exactly go out there and do it all myself. It would look a wee bit cumbersome, wouldn't it? So
you'd have to be really nimble.
Oh, yeah, I'd have to be the most coordinated man in history. So that simply isn't feasible. So I put a band together, a fantastic group of local musicians who I know and trust, you know, friends and people who I know can do the material justice, and we'll start gigging in July.
And obviously, this won't mean much to our listeners here in the US,
no.
But where are you going to be playing?
Well, Birmingham, UK, for starters. That, as I say, is in July. And I've no doubt that footage of that show will crop up on YouTube so that... you know, some of your listeners may be able to at least see some of that stuff performed live, even if it is just somebody with an iPhone or something like that, that there will be opportunities for people to see that performed live. And we may well, of course, record that show, professionally speaking, and see how it comes out.
Right. And our time is winding down, but... You're obviously bitten with the music bug. Do you have plans on another album?
I have some studio time booked next month, once I'm back from the Kiss show in Copenhagen. One thing this album has done in the release of it and the wonderful reaction that it's had is that it's made me realise how much I enjoy songwriting, so I've been straight back at it, really, and I've got several ideas to put down, so whether I'll make an album's worth of material in the short term, I'm not sure, but I'm certain there'll be more songs out before the end of the year, perhaps as an EP, or perhaps they'll be released song by song, and we haven't really decided yet, but without question, there'll be more Ian Danter material before 2013 is done and dusted.
That's great. And I do hope that you'll keep me in the loop. I really love the music. And, you know, wish you every success. And if I can help you on this side of the pond, I would love to.
Great. Well, stick it in Gene Simmons' hand when you get 5 minutes. Next time he's passing, just throw a copy at Gene or Paul and see whether they like it.
Right, I'll certainly do that. My producer is whining in my ear. So, Ian Danter, I really want to thank you for taking time out to talk to us today. And I'm sure I talk for... all of our listeners in wishing you every success. And as I said, don't be a stranger. I want to see where you take this.
Okay, Simon, well, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for having me on your program.
Okay, I'll talk to you again. till next time, goodbye.
Cheerio.